Temperatures rising in troubled Libya, and as a result, oil prices are climbing around the world.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning to you. I'm Bob Moon in for Jeremy Hobson. BP this morning announced it is very likely that it will evacuate its employees from Libya as violent protests rock that country. It's reportedly already shut down its Libyan operations. Oil's up $3 a barrel so far today to around $89.50. Libya is the world's fourth largest producer of oil, and even though Europe gets much of it, prices on the global market are interconnected. From Cairo Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports now on Libya's economic importance to the region and to the U.S.
On a street leading to the now famous Tahrir Square, Egyptians are still chanting for freedom, and now also for Libya's. The big difference between Egypt and Libya, though, oil. Libya produces 2% of the world's supply. Speaking to the BBC, London oil analyst Nick McGregor laid out the potential impact.
Very little Libyan oil actually found its way directly to the US. Libya is far more a key supplier to European markets. For whom, it's the single largest supplier of oil and a considerable gas supplier.
The U.S. only started trading and investing with Libya in 2008, after more than a decade of sanctions. And even though Libya has so much oil wealth, the profits only go to a small elite. There's 30% unemployment, even more among young people. That's a combustible mix like in other oil-rich nations that are rumbling with revolution. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Nobody saw it coming. At least that's what bankers have claimed when it comes to the global economic meltdown. There are plenty of critics who insist lots of people knew, and now international finance chiefs have agreed to a new early warning system. Money bosses from the 20 biggest economies met in Paris this weekend and came up with a plan to battle so-called global imbalances. Sounds a little wonky to me, so hopefully our European bureau chief, Stephen Beard, can help sort it all out. He's with us from London, and let's start with those big, bad global imbalances. What's that mean, and why are there so many worries about them, Stephen?
Trade imbalances is what we're talking about mainly here. Countries like the US importing a lot more than they export, while China, for example, does the opposite, exporting, for example, huge quantities of computers, electronic goods, and so on, while not importing as much. The argument is this helped create the financial crisis because China was awash with export earnings, lent billions to the US and Europe, which triggered a debt bubble here, which eventually burst.
So will this meeting in Paris keep that from happening again, though?
Well, the G20 agreed to draw up a list of what they call early warning indicators, things like trade deficits, budget deficits, and so on. And the idea is the G20 will monitor these indicators in the different countries. And when an indicator starts flashing red, the group will say to the country concerned, look, you've got a problem. But Steve Barrow of Standard Bank points out the countries that have a problem can't be forced to take action, raising a fundamental question about the whole process.
Will they feel sufficiently pressurized or embarrassed, if you like, by having those big imbalances and do something about it? And that really is the key issue here.
Nevertheless, he thinks this plan is a step forward because at least we'll have some specific targets that say if your deficit is 4 or 5% of GDP, that's a problem.
Marketplace's Europe correspondent Stephen Beard, thanks.
Okay, Bob.
Let's do the numbers. European markets are showing jitters from the spreading unrest in the Middle East. London's FTSE is down 0.25% at this hour. The DAX in Frankfurt has lost nearly 0.67%. Wall Street will be closed for President's Day.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, offering its Raise Your Rates CD as well as online savings account and money market account. Learn more at allybank.com. And by CSX, working to reduce traffic and pollution while moving 1 million tons of freight daily. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
When you hear the words Internet Dating Conference, you might expect to find folks who specialize in finding love. Well, in this case, we're talking attendees who are experts at finding customers, as reporter Karen Burkett tells us from WLRN in Miami.
The online dating industry is a lucrative one. Revenue has been flat in recent years, but the industry still generates over $1 billion annually in the U.S. Attendees of the iDate 2011 conference included entrepreneurs, programmers, sales reps. These experts are involved in millions of people's love lives.
What does your company know about love?
What do we know about love? We're behind the scenes. We're a back office solution.
The matches made at this conference are about the business side of internet dating. A programmer might find that one true investor. If things work out, a company will be launched. David Evans writes an industry blog called Online Dating Insider.
They will put that site up on the internet much faster than it took to start one, say, even 5 or 10 years ago.
A number of other companies that have nothing to do with romance were here to woo clients. iovation is a small firm that provides security for 22 dating websites, blocking identity thieves, spammers, and online predators. Royal Caribbean is trying to sell singles and couples cruises. Google wants dating websites to advertise with them and not their main competitor.
Well, Google is scared right now because they're seeing a lot of their advertising revenue going over to Facebook.
Paul Carrick-Brunson was a conference panelist. With all the talk of deals, he wonders if industry growth is flat because online dating isn't giving customers what their hearts desire.
I think that a challenge that this industry faces, that it is a love industry, and I just wonder how many of us are in it for the love, right, and the connection versus the bottom line.
In this industry, it seems there ain't no romance without finance. From Miami Beach, I'm Karen Burkett for Marketplace.
A final note, those pro-labor protesters in Wisconsin have been making headlines around the world as they challenge a Republican move to strip public workers of their collective bargaining rights. And in response, they've been getting quite a mouthful of pizza. There's a restaurant about a block from the Capitol in Madison that put up a Facebook page suggesting donations to help feed the crowds. Well, not only have there been hundreds of dollars worth of orders from dozens of states, the website Politico reports donations of pizza solidarity have been phoned in from as far away as China and Egypt. Now, you know, the Italians once colonized Libya, but there's no way of knowing if the Libyans have a pizza place that's been getting calls to support protesters over there. I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
If the center can't hold, things tend to fall apart.
The age of anxiety is characterized by a sense of a diminishing American ability to control events around the world.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Zero Sum Future and a New Economic Order next time on Marketplace. Also, the day's business news. It's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.